Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, pull up a chair. It's Hacks on Tap with David Axelrod and Mike Murphy.
And by the way, I never went to the island, and Bill Clinton went there supposedly 28 times. I never went to the island, but Larry Summers, I hear, went there. He was the head of Harvard. And many other people that are very big people, nobody ever talks about them. I never had the privilege of going to his island, and I did turn it down, but a lot of people in Palm Beach were invited to his island. In one of my very good moments, I turned it down. I didn't want to go to his island.
Never been to the island. The island.
Yes, little St. James Island, ironically, in the Virgin Islands. That was Jeffrey Epstein's private island there, where he apparently, allegedly, and I guess been now established, took young women and did horrible things to them. So, Liz Smith, you're here. Good to see you. Hello. Again.
Quite an intro there.
Yes, I know. I wanted to put a little pause before all of that, before I introduce you. There's no connection. Guys, this thing is sticking to Trump like tar paper, and it seems like everything he does kind of perpetuates the story.
Well, it's probably true because it fits, and he's acting like the classic guilty dog barking the loudest, you know, and he doesn't know how to slither out of this, and it's perfect MAGA, you know, internet chow. So it's sort of a beautiful, perfect storm. Now, I don't know if it means a damn to somebody out in real voter world down the road here. But boy, oh boy, is it gumming the gears. And it's fun to watch. Even though when you step back and think about it, it's horrific that an American president would be anywhere near something like this. Basically a horrible sex abuse and trafficking ring. And yeah, there's no doubt they were pals. I mean, you know, this one's not hard to figure out.
Well, you've got now this lawsuit, this $1 trillion, whatever it is, lawsuit that he filed against Rupert Murdoch, because the Wall Street Journal published a story about his entry in a birthday book for Jeffrey Epstein on his, I guess, 50th birthday, that was lewd and suggested that he knew exactly the kinds of stuff that Epstein was up to. Liz, Murphy raises the question, does this matter? I have my own theory, but I want to hear yours.
Yeah, I was actually going to go there. So it matters in that this is clearly an issue Donald Trump doesn't want to talk about, and it's an ugly issue. It's got him on the defensive. I do have some concerns about it. I think Democrats should continue to push it, try to push for some transparency. They should fan the flames, but I don't think it is beneficial for this story to become a Democrats versus Donald Trump story. I got sort of nervous the other day when I saw Chuck Schumer on the Senate floor talking about this, and that's sort of the last thing we need.
Keep that out of my dream journal. I don't need it.
Exactly. And this is a better fight if it's a MAGA, intra-MAGA fight.
You could see, to your point, you could see Trump tried very quickly to turn it into a Democrat thing. That this was a Democrat hoax.
And it is more credible when you have people like Dan Bongino or even Joe Rogan on the other side of Donald Trump on this versus a Chuck Schumer. Well, and just on how much this means to voters, I do believe this means something to the MAGA base, but I'm skeptical that even if we can even if we can really use this against Trump or get Trump on the record more, that the people who are really energized about this issue are going to translate or somehow turn into Democratic voters. So we should be realistic, I think, about the political implications of an issue like this.
See, well, first of all, let's listen to Joe Rogan, who made some news, maybe it was yesterday. I mean, let's put this in context. This is a big deal to a lot of people in the MAGA base. They believe that Epstein, first of all, there's so much of a focus on pedophilia among some of these voters, but they believe there was a huge cover-up about the powerful people who Epstein was servicing with the sex trafficking that he was doing of young women, and they think it's been hidden. So Trump and his supporters promised transparency on this. The attorney general promised that she was going to let all of these records become public, and then did a 180, I would say almost certainly at the behest of Trump. But this is what Joe Rogan had to say yesterday.
This one's a line in the sand.
Yeah.
Because this is one where there's a lot of stuff about, you know, when we thought Trump was going to come in and a lot of things are going to be resolved.
Yeah.
We're going to drain the swamp. We're going to figure everything out. And when you have this one hardcore line in the sand that everybody's been talking about forever, and then they're trying to gaslight you on that.
Yeah, that is the core thing. Instead of draining the swamp, he is the swamp. He lied to MAGA. And if I were the Democrats, I would just repeat this over and over again. MAGA, MAGA, Schmaga, whatever. MAGA's got to figure out how they handle their champion lied to them on the fundamental premise of his candidacy. And just let the tar baby keep gumming stuff up.
He lied to them and then called them losers when they called him out for lying to them.
Yeah, which I'm sure didn't sit well with Rogan and others who, you know, I think earnestly believe that this issue should be fully aired. But here's what I think about this. And you know, Rove touched on this in his column last Thursday. I totally agreed with what he said about this. Where it can hurt them is in the midterm elections. They already have concerns and problems about bringing out Trump voters who are infrequent voters, who don't vote in midterm elections. They vote when Trump's on the ballot. This is another disincentive. And the Republicans in Congress are, a lot of them are knuckling under and not pushing for the disclosure that MAGA wants here. I think it's going to make it harder for them to get the turnout that they want. And this thing's going to go on because, you know, we're going to have people. This is going to come up in September. There's going to be a discharge petition.
No, it's never going to end. It's never going to end. And I think it's a symptom, and I agree with Carlton this too, but there's a larger kind of MAGA malaise happening now. It's feeling old. It's feeling tired. Trump, you know, he lied to us. He's just another politician. The ultimate triumph of cynicism. And that could, I think they've got a lot of midterm problems way beyond this, but it could add to just kind of, oh, he's just another politician, which is kryptonite for them. You know, it was him versus the system. He is the system. He's part of it.
No, this has always been a challenge when you run against the deep state and you become the state.
Exactly.
There are all kinds of challenges to this, but I got to disagree with you on one thing. And I know, you know, you're always sunny side up as a Trump opponent on how things are going badly. The thing that's striking to me is just how steady his support is among Republicans and among his base, and it's really holding him up. I mean, he's still hanging around there at 46%.
Yeah, but we're not saying different things. It is the lack of enthusiasm. It doesn't turn them into Democrats, but it does affect midterm energy when they're going to be down, in my view, an economic moat anyway. I mean, they're going to have a shitty midterm, but we have to wait and see. But that's my prediction. I'll bet money. And taking that edge, that disappointed malaise into MAGA does hurt turnout. That's my point.
We do know that the MAGA voters tend to drop off in the midterms, and this just further could accelerate that.
Yeah, that's my thinking on it. Listen, I should leave this right now. I just got to get something off my chest here. You know, Trump was asked whether he might pardon Ghislaine Maxwell, who was Jeffrey Epstein's partner and partner in crime, as it were, in
grooming these young
women and actually assaulting young women, according to their testimony, in prison now for 20 years, as she should be. In fact, one thing I meant to grab was this incredible exchange with Mike Johnson this weekend, who went on and on about, you know, she should be in there for life and maybe more and all of that. And then they asked him, this was on Meet the Press. He was asked, well, then would you urge the president not to pardon her? And he said, well, that's out of my lane. I don't think, and he would not.
I don't work weekends at my department.
But listen to Trump when he got asked this over in Scotland about the potential of pardoning Ghislaine Maxwell.
Mr. President, could you really rule out a pardon for Ghislaine Maxwell when you landed? Is that something you would ever consider and why?
Pardon for who?
For Ghislaine Maxwell.
Well, I'm allowed to give her a pardon, but nobody's approached me with it. Nobody's asked me about it. It's in the news about that aspect of it, but right now it would be inappropriate to talk about it. So
listen, guys, if I'm a Democrat, that's a thing I'm going after. This woman did unspeakable things to what's been said to hundreds and maybe as many as 1,000 young women when this is all said and done. And he doesn't know. He might pardon her. And if I'm a Democrat, I go right after him on that.
Yeah, I agree. Bottomless shame.
And I would go after other Republicans on it. You know, ask Republicans, do they agree with this? Do they think that the president should be floating a pardon? Yeah.
Like they did with Johnson. Because here's the bottom line. Donald Trump, he was associated with Epstein. He kind of celebrated Epstein's sexual frivolity. We know that. I mean, there's video of him talking about it. There are quotes of him talking about it. And he doesn't want these files out because they're embarrassing to him. And the idea that, and he's holding out a pardon because she can probably either help or hurt him in this regard. She could offer some exoneration.
No, I think they want her to say, Trump warned Epstein, knock off the bad behavior and take up Bible study and, you know, try to squirm and perjure her way to some kind of pardon. But nobody's going to believe it. Look, everybody knows the guy's a pig and a perv. Even his own supporters kind of know. And of course he's trying to cover himself.
This goes to something, perversion goes to something that is a core value of theirs, you know, in all of the conspiracy theories, some of which sometimes there are real conspiracies out there. This whole idea of pedophilia is big. And so this is, you know, it may be as trivial as he doesn't want public what is embarrassing to him. But in any case, that just fries my ass that he gets away with that. That is a despicable thing that he can't say, no, I'm not going to pardon her.
Everything is transactional. He's Satan.
Yeah.
There is no compass.
One other thing about everything being transactional with Trump. He's in Scotland.
Where they hate him, but anyway, keep going.
Yeah, but where he has two golf courses, he was just opening up a new golf course, and he literally spent half his time. I don't care that he was playing golf. He was there. Taxpayers flew him over to Scotland to promote his commercial projects. Nobody had, you know, Trump always likes to say, nobody has ever seen anything like this. Nobody in the history of this republic has ever exploited the presidency for his own benefit more than Donald Trump.
Oh, well, look, beyond even that, the next time he flies to Scotland or where he keeps his crypto scam money, he wants to fly in a 747 given by a Gulf state that they're now raiding a Pentagon atomic weapons budget to spend nearly $1 billion to put the gold-plated toilets in. It is unbelievable. There is no depth.
Well, and then go the next step, Mike. Under the agreement, apparently, he gets to keep the plane when he leaves.
Of course.
A little thank you like any present king. From American taxpayers. It goes to his library foundation. Well, that library, if it's ever built, is not going to be built in Donald Trump's lifetime, probably. So he'll be flying that damn plane around for the rest of his life. It is unbelievable. I've said it before. The man, as he has wielded a Trojan horse of populism into the Capitol with a kleptocracy inside. And he is profiting in unbelievable ways.
I'm starting to worry about you. I agree. But I don't want you winding up on Lexington Avenue with a megaphone and a soapbox here. Don't worry. We're going to get him in the end. Yes. It'll end badly for him.
This is a salient line of attack. And it's really, really hard. You know, I know when I was reading all the clips this morning in preparation for this, there are so many outrages.
Wait, you prepare for this?
Yeah.
Now, Art, you're an unusual guest.
I'm an A student.
that's how you get to Dartmouth.
Exactly. But there are so many outrages there in the news that it's exhausting. And it's really hard to figure out how we're going to get the message across on all of these things. But this does go to a core thing that a lot of people hate about Washington, which is this idea that politicians, whether they're Democrats who are, you know, profiting off stock trades from insider information, or they're the president of the United States getting this plane or flying over to Scotland and spending millions of dollars to promote his golf course, that they're all in it for themselves. And we know in 2006, the anti-corruption message was a really, really powerful one for Democrats when they were out of power, when they wielded it against Republicans in the wake of the 2004 election. And I do think that Democrats really need to take that sort of message and turn it against Republicans and get Republicans on the record on things like the Scotland golf course, the plane from the Qataris. Also, one thing we didn't touch on when we're talking about that plane is that it is a gift from a big sponsor of extremist groups, people who fund activity against the United States. And that is something that shouldn't be lost in this either. And when we're talking about a district, if you're looking at a congressional race like Mike Lawler in the Hudson Valley, something like that is also going to be a potent message. So just because it is not the dominant thing right now doesn't mean Democrats should let it go.
Well, it can be. It can be, depending on how people feel about how they're doing in this deal, because Donald Trump's principal promise was to boost the American working family. And so far as I can see, the family he's boosting here is his own.
Yeah, but part of the problem is, and it's frustrating because I'm on the side of the argument, Dems always want to win against Trump on outrage. You're taking away democracy. You're stealing crypto money. You have stupid hair. Your sons are pigs.
Yeah, but this isn't a democracy argument. This is a tangible.
The problem is people think politics is so corrupt and awful. The both sidesism thing out in voter land is so strong. I mean, if it catches on, great. But it's going to be economic pain that makes or breaks them, and I'm betting on break.
But where this fits into the economic pain argument is what Axelrod was saying before, that he's someone who has run on populism. And if you look at the Big Beautiful Bill, if you look at what he's doing here, even if you look at the Epstein thing, he is protecting elites. He is promoting elites. He's putting money in the pocket of elites at the expense of working people.
And using government to enrich himself.
Totally, totally. But, you know, they all do it problem, the cynicism that's everywhere. I think the other thing Trump always has going for him is he's very good at making it about the Democrats. And the Democrats feed into that by being hapless and pathetic. So how do we prop them up enough to win a midterm they ought to be able to win?
Okay, let's take a break right here for a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
Hey, Hackaroos, if you are running a business right now, you already know it's hard. Tight budgets, hiring freezes, economic uncertainty, tariffs, it's all just the beginning. Good news. Upwork is helping small businesses do more for less. And look, I've got a small business and I actually in real life use Upwork and I like it. What is Upwork? Well, it's a hiring platform designed for the modern playbook where you can find, hire, and pay expert freelancers who deliver results from day one. Perfect for businesses on tight budgets, fast timelines, and zero room for error. Companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in the way they staff key projects and initiatives. By accessing a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web development, or web dev, as you kids say, AI, design, admin support, marketing, and more. I use it for graphic designers, and I've found great people on Upwork at really reasonable cost. Freelancers on Upwork cost way less than hiring a full-time or going through a staffing agency, and Upwork is convenient, cost-effective, and transparent. No subscriptions, no upfront fees. You only pay when you hire. Posting a job, it's free, it's fast, it's simple. So try it out. Post a job today and hire tomorrow with Upwork. Well, now is the perfect time to try Upwork because they are giving our incredible Hacks on Tap listeners a $200 credit after spending $1,000 in your first 30 days. I got to try this. That's $200 you can put toward your next freelancer, design help, AI, automation, admin support, marketing, whatever your business might need. So do what I do. Visit upwork.com/save right now for this great offer. That's Upwork. upwork.com/save to get a $200 credit to put towards your next freelancer to help you grow your business. That's Upwork, upwork.com/save, S-A-V-E, upwork.com/save. Don't wait. This offer is only valid June 24th through August 5th, so the clock is ticking. Check it out. I use Upwork. I love Upwork. I think you will too.
I don't want to leave Scotland because there was real news there. And it goes to some of what you're talking about, Mike, which is that in between the golf matches and promoting his golf courses, he announced an agreement, a trade agreement with the European Union that on the face of it looks like the U.S. came out on the better end of it, 15% tariffs. Now, those tariffs ultimately maybe paid by Americans, but
they will be. Yeah.
Yes, but you know, no tariffs on our stuff, 15% on theirs, exemptions for some key things that are important to the American industrial base. Mike, what at this point, you know, considering my buddy Scott Jennings was on his radio show yesterday declaring victory, and they all said he didn't know what he was doing and he's winning and so on. Is he winning?
Yeah, winning is such a tricky phrase. I mean, how do you measure it? Presidents win all the time because they can give orders and nobody can stop it. So there's no way to stop him starting a trade war. He basically has done a shakedown on our allies to put a tax paid by consumers on the U.S. market. So in the short time, he got what he wanted, which he gets a lot. So he won in that sense. In the longer term, will he have more political power after the next election or less, which I think is the big macro question? He'll have less, in my view, because tariffs take a long time. They're like slow poison. But they compound. You look at the big autos, they've all lost billions of dollars in the last quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what happens when an auto company loses billions of dollars? They can try to raise prices, but then sales go down and they lose more. They can close factories and reduce capacity. That's layoffs. They can try to squeeze their suppliers. We've already had some bankruptcies in Michigan in the supply chain. Nothing good happens, but it's a slow burn. So in the short term, you know, has he won by throwing the tantrum he wanted and shaking down some allies to allow American consumers to pay more for their products? Yes. But in the bigger picture, I think the economic pain a year from now, we'll be saying, wow, this tariff thing really hasn't worked out. At least that's the history of tariffs, and it's a long history.
The history of tariffs suggests that before the midterm elections, the effects of them will be felt in ways that are not good for the country and therefore not good not good for Trump. There's a longer term impact, too, which is, yeah, you muscle your allies into paying up protection money, but that you also push them into finding other outlets for their products,
right,
and developing other relationships, particularly with China, who becomes the big beneficiary in this. But you know something? Trump never thinks in terms of the future. It's always like, what do I pull off today that helps me?
Yeah, everything's a cheap Queens hustle, like a parking lot lease. How do I grind them today? And long term, we're going to pay a price for this, not just a consumer, but imagine the next Secretary of State after Trump from a non-crazy administration sitting down at the Europeans. They're going to be like, ha, ha, ha. So our turn now, pal. Payback time.
And I don't think that people generally, I did see the Scott Jennings, people like that, taking a victory lap over this, but I don't think most people follow the ins and outs of trade deals and who's winning or who's not. I do think what people follow is how much do the things I buy cost? Do I still have my job? Is this factory still open? And there's plenty of evidence that this is already costing jobs, that it is already raising prices. And when voters have said that their number one issue is costs, you know, jobs, that is going to be a problem for Republicans.
Well, you see it in polling. There's not great enthusiasm for these tariffs. People yeah. understand that it'll probably raise their costs. And
But Trump's ratings on running the economy are up. You know, ANSO's got a new Wall Street Journal poll, and that's one of the notable things, at least the perception. The economic reality has not moved the perception yet, but that is a ticking thing that over time, I believe, will.
Well, one of the funny things about this is that he's basically now getting credit for cleaning up the mess that he created. There almost was an economic catastrophe in April when he unveiled these tariffs, and he quickly, you know, slid down the pole and recalibrated and found a level that the world might tolerate, even as they make other arrangements in the future. And he's getting credit for, you see, it wasn't as bad as it seemed.
Right. The naysayers. And that's what Jennings is doing. And by the way, Google Scott Jennings Daily Show for a pretty funny video showing the next snapping evolution of my old friend who knew what Trump was and would
Listen,
say
he's
it
my friend
to,
now
to the current.
But yeah. you know he has
well,
made
see a, what
he,
you've done to him
he has made a he has made a very very significant shift over the last year
and, no he ought to wear a neck brace. I don't know how he doesn't have terrible whiplash, a complete 180 at the speed of sound, but anyway, it's a very funny piece. You should Google it.
Speaking of 180s, the other thing that happened in Scotland was the president was asked about Vladimir Putin. And we all remember the love affair between Putin and Trump and how Trump said he was my friend and I trust him and so on. And this is what he had to say in Scotland.
You all sense your frustration with Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
Do you think he's been lying to you about his intentions in Ukraine?
Well, I don't want to use the word lying. All I know is we'd have a good talk, and it seemed on, let's say, three occasions, it seemed that we were going to have a ceasefire and maybe peace, and you divide it up and you do whatever you have to do that, obviously, to get to the end. And all of a sudden, missiles are flying into Kiev and other places. And I say, what's that all about? I spoke to him 3-4 hours ago, and it looked like we were on our way, and then I'd say, forget it. And I'm not going to talk anymore. You know, this has happened on too many occasions, and I don't like it. I don't like it.
Kiev, Donald, Kiev.
He doesn't like it, Mike. He doesn't like it.
He doesn't like it. He still pronounces it in the old Soviet way, another Q. anyway, yeah, the fact that he's a nitwit is a huge problem. You know, in Trump speak, it would be he's a low-intelligence individual. But he's learning. He's learning. Maybe Putin actually lied to him. What do we think? And that's good because he'll finally open up the arms shipments again. That said, he will sell out the Ukrainians in a partition deal in a minute if Putin will move there, which he might eventually.
Divide it up and do whatever you need to.
Yeah, yeah. Give them most of it. They, you know, anyway, it's Trump.
That's where I was going, is that at least it's a positive evolution that he's beginning to admit publicly that people like Vladimir Putin Benjamin Netanyahu might not be on the level, and that's a move in the right direction, at least.
Yeah, he also took issue with Netanyahu's suggestion that there is not starvation in Gaza, which is palpably untrue. The question is, does any of this matter? I will say this, Murphy. One thing that occurs to me as I've been watching this is Marco Rubio has a lot of power and influence now. He's not only the Secretary of State, but he is the National Security Advisor, and he's the guy who Trump is relying on this. He has been outwardly supportive when Trump embraced Putin, but he was, for all his career in the Senate, virulently opposed to Putin. And you wonder whether he's gently nudging Trump away from Vance. And
My guess is, having known him a long time, he is, to the extent he's capable of that, is wet spaghetti. But I think he still knows what the right thing is. He just refuses to fight for it. Marco's always been a guy who could slide under a closed door and is a careerist, but he does know what to do. It's just whether or not he has the courage to really do much of it.
No, but I think I think he may be doing something. And I wonder when the sort of Tucker Carlson world starts, targeting him, for pulling Trump back from Putin love and some of the other positions that he's taken.
Let's stop for a minute and listen to a word from one of our fine sponsors.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Speaking of war.
Nice transition. Speaking of blood and iron and soil.
Yes, redistricting in Texas.
Oh, well, yeah. Look, this thing is let me just set the scene here, because I think I know where you're going to go, and I mostly agree with you. Redistricting has been a sport of politics for a long time, but the Texans are trying to take it to a new level by doing...
Well, they were instructed to by Trump.
Well, of course. Everything goes to the master cylinder, of course, but... to do, I guess we'll call it premature redistricting, because normally it's after the census every year. But why not? Why wait for that? Try to rig it for a couple of seats. Now, again, I used to live in a district in California, the Dems drew, that was only contiguous at low tide. Your great state of Illinois, Republicans got 47% of the vote last time and got 3 congressional seats. The Democrats got 14.
14, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So the Texans have clearly made a visit to Chicago with a notepad in hand. But this new thing to take the already kind of crooked game on both sides and not even wait for a census is a whole new level of horrible.
It'd be hard to draw a district, Murphy, where you live that would satisfy your partisan predilections.
Oh, no, I've got a couple. I brought my notepad. when I was working for Angler in Michigan, we always were irritated with Sandy Levin. We kept trying to figure out how to draw him into Ontario. Never could quite pull it off. But anyway, my point is, there are no halos in this redistricting thing by far. But this new idea of let's take the corrupt
in the middle of a
every 10
decade.
Yeah, and last year, remember what the Dems tried last time? They all got thrown out in court. It was so greedy. Tony Soprano would have said, no, offensive, too much. But now they're trying to not even wait for a census to do it, which is like a whole new escalation of stupidity. And the Dems are threatening to do it themselves, which they're totally capable of.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's interesting what the Democrats are doing, and it seems to be a direct response to the Democratic base saying we want more. Going back to what you said about war and blood, you know, the Democratic base wants some war. They want some blood. And, you know, there are some very important fine print that people aren't reading when it comes to California and New York redistricting, which is it is virtually impossible for any of it to happen before 2026. It would involve amending the state constitutions, voters weighing in, and that is very unlikely to happen. So I see it more as Democrats sort of upping the ante, verbally fighting more against Republicans, maybe calling out their bluff in Texas and showing that, hey, we're willing to play hardball too. I don't know if this any of this results in any redistricting, whether it's in Texas. It's certainly not going to happen in New York, unlikely to happen in California, but it's Democrats responding to the base demanding more. Yeah.
So let me challenge you a little on that.
Yeah, we should listen to Newsom, who's out pounding on it.
I think the California thing is more serious than you do. But let's listen to what Governor Newsom had to say about this, talking to our friends on Pod Save America.
Because these guys are playing by a different set of rules. And so from my perspective, if we're going to play fair in a world that is wholly unfair, we may have the higher moral ground, but the ground is shifting from underneath us. And I think we have to wake up to that reality. And I'm talking to members of my legislature, whatever our alternatives. We can do a special session. I can call for one today if I chose to. We can then put something on the ballot, and I could call a special election. We can change the Constitution with the consent of the voters, and I think we would win that. I think people understand what's at stake in California. I think we'd come out in record numbers. I think it would be extraordinary success.
Yeah, so I think that is real. I think that is those discussions are really happening. And one interesting thing was that Newsom brought a delegation of Democratic legislators from Texas to California. And the message is very clear. You know, you come with a gun, we're coming with a bazooka. And I think that the bazooka threat, Murphy, is not an idle threat. I think that they will try.
No, I think he means that he has this, or his world has this strategy that being the tough Trump fighter is a good path to the nomination for him. I'm not sure that's the right strategy, and you know, I've given him my 2 cents. But in California, because of the nature of the, you can put stuff on the ballot and it's one party rule, he has the ability to do stuff. Now, one of the problems is there aren't a lot of Republican districts to clip here, but there are a couple. You know, Young Kim in Orange County, Valdeo down south. That's already the toughest district in the country.
He's got problems as it is because he voted for that bill. That largest Medicaid population.
Yeah, though he's been a hard guy to beat. You know, he's a good Paul. So, yeah, but the bottom line is there are things that can be done here, and this thing will not be a clean, clean, easy win for the Texans.
Well, I think that the message is we are going to match whatever you do. And I don't think it's a bluff, Liz. I think it's an actual threat to try and get them to off of where they are. But the other thing about Texas, by the way, is you start messing around with those districts, you're putting some Republicans in jeopardy in some of those. They may lose more than that would be true in California.
Right, right. They may wind up in primaries with each other. Yeah. And no incumbent wants that, R or D.
Sorry, bluff may have been the wrong word there. It is a challenge. All I'm trying to point out is that there's some fine print here. Even with California, which is more likely to change than New York, there are a number of steps that they would have to take before they do it. It's not like Democrats can just go out in their legislature, redraw the lines. It would take a lot of steps. So I'm just trying to serve as a reality check.
Man, he made that clear. No, I think so. And I think, you know, both of you are right. I think Newsom thinks it serves his purpose. But the bottom line is that you steal 4 or 5 seats in Texas or 4 seats in Texas, that could be the balance of the election. That's what Trump sees. So, if you can checkmate that,
Well, if you turn 4 into 2, it becomes, I think they're going to be in enough trouble that the 3-seat Scammeroonie in Texas won't be enough. But California, at least 2 seats could be rigged here.
Yeah, that's through the rose-colored glasses of Mike Murphy.
No. Two could be rigged. Two Republican seats.
No, I'm saying that. I mean, I think that the odds are very high that Democrats take over the House. And I don't know what the scenario is going to be.
So the rose-colored glasses of David Axelrod.
No, I'm just looking at history. I mean, the fact is history suggests that the incumbent party loses seats, and they have the narrowest of majorities. So you would presume that that is the case. There's Lex.
The rose-colored question is the Senate, because the map is very good for Republicans. But little things have been happening that take it from complete fantasy to really tough, but maybe you get to a tie. Should we pivot to that? Because we've had some news there.
The big story, political story on that score this week was that the Democrats hooked the big kahuna in North Carolina, and former Governor Roy Cooper made an announcement.
Politicians in D.C. are running up our debt, ripping away our health care, disrespecting our veterans, cutting health for the poor, and even putting Medicare and Social Security at risk just to give tax breaks to billionaires. That's wrong, and I've had enough. I've thought on it and prayed about it, and I've decided I want to serve as your next United States Senator.
With violins. My God, we gave him the free ad. Now we're that bad this early.
Well, but that was a that was a newsworthy announcement, Mike. We're here to report the news. No, but I'll tell you one thing DNC. About that ad. I watched it. There was a 2.5 minute video, actually, and he's very good. Cooper's
no,
good.
He is good. Really puts good. The seat in play, and you know, in a just universe, Laura Trump runs, so Trump's got his own name,
which
on
is
the
why
ballot.
She's not running.
Yeah, well, my point is just universe, not not what's going to happen.
No, I think Trump sniffed that one out.
Yeah, no, he knew he didn't want his paw in that bear trap. but still, the Dems are now in the real hunt there, and unless Kemp reverses, the governor of Georgia. They are, and we nominate a clown, or I keep saying they nominate a clown.
Oh, it slipped out there. I've
been in that army a long time when it was the Army of Saving America.
You're a Republican. The party drifted from you.
Yeah, exactly. But I registered independent. I couldn't stand it anymore. Yeah. No. Yeah. No, I'm still a soldier, lowly soldier in a war against socialism. but
I'll tell you what would be an interesting opportunity for Democrats if Andy Beshear, the governor of Kentucky, decided to run for the U.S. Senate instead of running for president, as he's apparently thinking. He would be a very competitive candidate.
That would be amazing, yeah.
In that state, as Cooper was in North Carolina.
That would make that a hell of a race. Anyway, so the Senate, I'm just old enough to have been around in 86. And another first midterm where things went sideways, and the map initially we lost places like Alabama. So it's just starting to get interesting. We'll see. It will have to be a real wave election.
Yeah. And Cooper is really by far our biggest Democratic recruit of the cycle. He raised $3.4 million in 24 hours, which is an insane number for anyone who follows fundraising numbers. And he's not only a survivor, I mean, he thrives in tough political environments. He was able to win the governor's race in 2016 when Trump won North Carolina. He was able to get reelected in 2020. When Trump won North Carolina. And so he is a fantastic candidate for a year that should be more favorable to Democrats.
The question, Liz, is where else? Democrats are trying, there's always, Susan Collins is like the fool's gold, right? Every 6 years, she's vulnerable. Democrats can take it. Maine is a Democratic-leaning state.
But again, agreed, she always escapes, but narrowly. And, the jig could be up. I don't like betting against her, but the environment could be pretty bad. She's a little
well. The question
the
is who they recruit. They're talking about trying to get Janet Mills to run the governor. She's 77 years old, and I don't know whether she will do that. And it kind of, Cooper's no spring chicken, but he's a decade, or 8 years younger than her.
That was our old Branstad, Governor Branstad thing. Reelect change, a sixth term.
Yeah, and then it gets tougher once you go outside of that, because then you're looking at places like Texas, where
very tough. But
if Ken Paxton were to win that primary, that could that could, and if Democrats.
Let me ask
actually,
you something, Liz, on that question. Who's going to be, who would be the ideal Democrat nominee down there?
Well, so I'm a little biased here. I am a huge fan of State Senator James Tallarico, who State Rep James Tallarico down there. And he,
have you seen this guy, Murphy?
No, I've heard about him, but I haven't seen video.
Yeah, go ahead, Liz.
And he recently was on Joe Rogan's show and just is lights out impressive. And I think Texas is one of those states where Democrats need to try something completely different. And this guy is completely different. He was a middle school teacher before running for the state house. He flipped a Republican district and he is, now
he's
in seminary
pastor.
School. Yeah, I was going to say, you beat me to it. He's in seminary school and he speaks very much in the language of faith and values that more Democrats, frankly, should be doing. And I could see him going really all across that state and appealing to voters that Democrats traditionally don't appeal to. We need to do a game of persuasion in Texas to win. We've talked for years and years and years that if we just register enough people, they'll turn out for Democrats. That hasn't worked. We need to, yes, register more people, but do more persuasion there. And Democrats generally need to try to find different models of candidates to help us win in these states. We have been doing a very poor job of winning in states we used to win in. And that will require looking to candidates who look and sound and very different from your typical DC Democrat.
The key is he'll need to be endorsed by the mom in red tennis shoes. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. But there's always the great grail in Texas, though, to be fair, a superstar candidate like this guy sounds like he is, and the right national storm, Texas is inching demographically, though the Latino vote that was supposed to shove the Texan into the Democratic column has split. Trump has done well there. So, but I agree, worth watching. The one I'm going to watch is Michigan.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that.
Because that's Michigan, to a slightly lesser extent, Ohio, they catch cold on tariffs before the pneumonia comes to everybody else. And you're already, I saw some private polling where the Trump numbers were significantly lower not long ago because, we're totally integrated with the Canadians there, the Ontario, it's the other Michigan. And, now the Ambassador Bridge is a tariff nightmare and the autos are feeling it. So keep an eye on that Michigan race and to some extent, Ohio.
And what about Iowa?
Boy, Iowa, as you know, has become so culturally conservative compared to when we were stomping around out there. It's like, I know there's some superstar Dem who's kind of interesting, but I haven't really zeroed in. I got to call my buddy Kochel out there and see what's really going on.
And I wouldn't leave Alaska completely out of the conversation. Mary Peltola could be a very strong candidate there. It is more of a reach, I'd say, but she was someone who overperformed the top of the ticket, I think, by 12 or 13 points in 2024. And if Democrats are able to recruit her, she could definitely make that race competitive.
Tallarico is a very, very religious guy, very earnest, very candid, very moral in his bearing. Which would be an interesting matchup with Ken Paxton.
True, who's a complete, makes Trump look like Gandhi.
Well, I mean, Trump, I would think, was leaning toward him because he's been one of his strongest supporters in the country. And then his wife, who's a state senator there, just divorced him for something that, I forget the word she used, but they intimated that he was doing things that he shouldn't have been doing.
I hope she primaries them so I can buy their story and sell it to Warner Brothers, because that would be beautiful.
Still working that, huh?
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So just to close out the discussion of the Democratic Party, you raised this earlier, Mike, and you said, what Newsom thinks the prescription is for Democrats. Liz is one of the great, bright young minds in the Democratic Party. She was with Pete Buttigieg in 2020. Liz, looking into your crystal ball, what do you see?
Oh, way to put me on the spot there. Fighting Trump and being a fierce opponent against Trump will be very important. But the Democrat who can paint a picture of what a future looks like post-Trump is going to be even more important. And I really do think it's going to be important that Democrats have a candidate who can embody the change, anti-establishment message that is has been sweeping people like Donald Trump to re-election, or sweeping people like Zoran Mamdani to a victory in the New York City mayoral election. We cannot keep putting up candidates who are seen as avatars of the status quo and the establishment. And so I think with the Democratic Party, the person who may or probably should rise to the top is someone who can, yes, fight Donald Trump to the nail, but also take on a change message, anti-establishment message, and paint a picture of what America could look like post-Trump.
The reality for the Democratic Party is that it's the party of working people. I've said it here before, that has become seen by a lot of working people as the party of elites and a failed institutions. Let me just play this.
Then I want to respond to that because I don't quite agree.
All right. Well, then let's play this twice. here's Pete Buttigieg on PBS, I guess.
Democrats have been slow to understand the changes in how people get their information, slow to understand some of the cultural changes that have been happening, and maybe most problematic of all, too attached to a status quo that has been failing us for a long time. Right now, you've got an administration that is burning down so many of the most important institutions that we have in this country, which is wrong. It is also wrong to imagine that we should have just kept everything going along the way it was. If our politics, our economy, and our culture were healthy, the rise of a figure like Donald Trump would never have happened in the first place.
I think he's on the right track there. And I think that's what Liz was talking about.
Sort of. But let me back up, because you said the Democratic Party is the party of working people. It sees itself that way. What it is kind of an awkward coalition of working people and secular elites and well-educated people,
I agree.
White liberals. And often the intellectual elite of the party, which tends to be professional, well-educated, goes in one direction. And the working class voters it feels entitled to go in another. They like the populism. And so the Democrats just haven't figured out how to resolve any of that. And it's a problem.
I agree with that 100%. I also think that because of what you describe, and I've said this here before, the Democratic Party approaches working people too often like missionaries and anthropologists.
Right, exactly,
and they show up
exactly.
And say, we're here to help you become more like us.
Now, on Pete,
and it's offensive and it's demeaning.
Yeah, no, it's total. I've always thought they ought to take the whole DNC, march them out to the parking lot, say, you've all got 2 minutes to change a pickup truck tire, and then, you know, pick of the 90% who can't, you know, double the votes of the 10% who can. But back to Pete Buttigieg, because I agree with some of what he said, and I'm a fan. I know and like Pete. One, I'm still cranky. He should have run for Senate in Michigan and been the hero of the Senate take-back.
I think he should have run for governor in Michigan.
Yeah. Well, you got the great mayor of New York there, Uncle Mike. But anyway,
mayor of Detroit.
Yeah, mayor of Detroit. Sorry, New York. God, see, Mondamism. It's infected
in
our brains
head.
Like an alien worm. Yeah, Karl Marx, the new mayor of New York. But to the point about Pete, I would say careful with the communications tactics as a message. You know, we got to be on podcasts. Shields, the late great Mark Shields, had a very
funny he was riff. Asked a question. He was asked a question.
I know. But he is right about a future-looking party. I think the smart nominee is going to say Donald Trump is an old mistake of old corruption and an old worldview. It's all about what happens to the American middle class over the next 10 years, and that's why I'm running for president. And leave Trump behind, because every nominee is going to trash Trump. I mean, every candidate for the nomination is. You know, Pritzker will be doing a pro-wrestling act, if I can only get my hands around his scrawny neck. Yeah, I can just hear it all. You want to be the Uncola, the interesting one, about tomorrow.
I think, and Liz, I'll give
and
just...
And Newsom could make a play there, but I don't know if he is.
No. I just want to say one thing. Trump is doing this. The message should be Trump is doing a teardown. The question is, what are you going to build? What are you going to build? And are you going to just restore what was there? Because that's a losing
the
message.
Number one question.
Are you gonna, let me finish, man. Are you going to...
Poor Liz, two windbags, one podcast.
Or are you going to be about renewal? Are you going to be offering something new? Liz, go ahead.
Yes. So just to Murphy's criticism of Pete talking about tactics, the reason why he talks about those tactics is because people ask him about them a lot. And the reason why people ask him about them a lot is because he was doing things two cycles ago, 8 years ago, that Democrats should be doing right now. And Democrats are playing catch up, which is going everywhere, communicating with voters on the mediums that actually reach them. As we know, in 2024, Democrats like Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, they didn't go on shows like Joe Rogan's. They didn't go on Theo Vaughn, on Flagrant, and they didn't try to meet voters where they were. They didn't go to and speak to ideological bubbles outside their own. So that's why he's asked about it. That's why he talks about it. It is not a central message of his. And I think more Democrats should emulate Pete and try to get outside of their comfort zone, try to get outside of just talking to the Democratic base. But the second thing is, I agree with Axelrod that the change message is going to be really important. I guess I agree with what I said earlier on that, which is that we cannot just reflexively say tearing down these institutions is bad and we need to restore them as exactly as they were pre-Trump. And we've got to be willing to call out inefficiencies, places where government has been wrong, places where government has run amok. And the Democrats who are able to do that, I think, can channel some of the change anti-status quo message.
I think and also offer some big, real ideas that are different and that don't sound like the same old
that's
incrementalism.
Important. Just to quickly retort, I don't disagree, Liz.
You're a mailbag killer.
He would windbag before mailbag. he would do himself good by saying, you know, that's the wrong question. The question is, what happens to the American middle class in the next 10 years? And go into the forward stuff rather than, even though he's asked to do a dissertation on communications process. He could use
you do
more
that on
that.
A podcast, and you're going to sound so phony and inauthentic.
Well, you know, we disagree, but onward.
I mean, the bottom line is that what he was addressing is true, that Democrats, Kamala Harris's failure to be willing to go into not just Rogan, but all kinds of different forums and just open up.
No, it's all true. It's just, is it a message? I would say not.
No.
All right. We're going to leave for a minute to pay the power bill, and then we'll be right back.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
All right, it's mailbag time. If you have a question for the hacks, cheat, do tricks, pretend you're the Illinois Democrats, record it on your smartphone and email it to us because we love the recorded ones. But if you don't want to do that, you can also just email us, and we like those too. The magic email address is hacksontap@gmail.com, hacksontap@gmail.com, or you can call our Rahm Emanuel for President Secret Headquarters /Off-Track Betting Center in Chicago and leave us a short question on the voicemail. 773-389-4471. I'll repeat it because who can remember that? 773-389-4471. Okay, for Dr. Axelrod from Craig.
Yes, sir.
Am I wrong in...
So far, no.
Am I wrong in thinking that twice in recent history, the DNC, Democratic National Committee, has deliberately tipped the scale in favor of a nominee for president? Hillary in 2016 and Harris in 2024. And each time, it ended poorly. Have they learned from this and allow truly open primary?
I don't think that I don't know what they've learned. I don't exactly know what the Democratic National Committee is doing. But I know this. I think we are looking in 2028 at perhaps the most open contest that we've ever had for president of the United States. I think there are going to be a lot of candidates running. I don't think anyone's going to have a huge advantage in that race. And it's going to be a true proving ground for the candidate. And I think there's a great deal of suspense, as we discussed earlier in this show, as to who will meet the moment. But I think someone will rise up through that field. And I don't think that it is like 2024, 2016, 2008. I don't think it's like that. I think that someone will rise up. Now, Barack Obama fought his way through that in 2008 when Hillary Clinton was the presumptive nominee. There is no presumptive nominee this time. So I'm really looking forward to it. We frankly should have had that kind of a primary in 2024.
Hear, hear.
On the topic of the DNC, if I could jump in, the DNC moved forward in 2020 with a truly open, transparent, and active debate schedule that started very early and provided clear pathways for candidates to participate. I think the DNC moved a little bit backward in 2024 by putting their thumb on the scale for the president's preference in the presidential primary order. And it would be smart for 2028 to take a step back from that.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. All right. Mike Murphy, this is one that'll get your engine going. Andrew said, I've just bought a mini Aceman EV made by Great Wall Motors. Here in Australia, we have no tariffs, and they say by 2035, 9/10 of new car, 9 out of 10 new cars bought here will be Chinese EVs. Now the Japanese tariff deal has been done. What's your 2035 forecast for the American car industry? Go ahead. I'm going to go get something to eat right now. I'll be back when you're done.
See you in an hour. Well, Andrew, I hope you enjoy your Chinese-made car as you drive by the Ford Development Center in Australia, where several hundred of your compatriots helped design worldwide cars for the Ford Motor Company. You know, I'm a free trader. I will say your forecast about Australia is right. The Chinese have a conquest strategy. Here's a little statistic. Today, the Chinese have the industrial power to make 50 million cars and light trucks a year. We here in the United States make about 10, 11 million. Their strategy is pretty simple. They have over 100 car companies. All but two or three lose money, and they're flooding foreign markets because they want worldwide hegemony. So, you know, a little troubling. Now, in the American market, which is about 9.5-10% of world car sales, we're the most profitable market, and we don't let the Chinese cars in here. One, because we don't want to lose our industry overnight. And two, we have certain concerns about security because the computer stuff in the cars, you don't want them driving by Air Force bases. So, all right, hang on there. Careful, I'll do the Adlai Stevenson. I'll talk about what foreign-made car you're driving, Mr. Axelrod. I tried to get him into an EV. That's a story for a whole podcast. He's in a hybrid now, so he gets points. But anyway, long story short, we're at risk of losing the auto industry. Donald Trump has been the greatest president of the Chinese auto industry ever, but we can't compete. And we have a wall up now, but it can't and shouldn't last forever. And unfortunately, this administration is doing everything it can to undercut American auto manufacturing. But the companies are tough. The new products coming are pretty good. So battle's not over yet, but this is not about Biden electric cars. This is about the survival of the American industrial base. Go to evpolitics.org to learn more. There we go. That was pretty quick.
I had another birthday while you
were... Yeah, you're out getting dental work.
As a Virginia resident, Devin asks Liz Smith, it seems Abigail Spanberger is the congresswoman from Southern Virginia, is almost certain to win the upcoming gubernatorial election. And that race is wildly regarded. I think he means widely regarded as a bellwether for the midterms. I'm curious what margin of victory you'd consider a good sign for Democrats and what margin would be concerning for them. That's an interesting question because Virginia always reports early. And so you do get some early signs from there. But go ahead.
Yeah, I do think people will be reading the tea leaves of the Virginia results. But the margin, you know, whether it's, you know, 7 points or 12 points, 15 points, a win is a win. What I would look more to is what the coattails are. You know, there's also a lieutenant governor's race. There's attorney general's race, and there are 100 House of Delegates seats up. And Democrats only have a two-vote advantage in the House of Delegates. And I think they'd feel a lot more comfortable if they had a larger margin there. So as much as we look at the margin, I think I'd look at the coattails to see what matters, because that will also impact her ability to get things done. And people do look a lot toward the governor of Virginia and what's going on in Virginia, not just in what happens in these off years, but what the governor is able to achieve there.
And if Mikey Sherrill and in New Jersey and Abigail Spanberger in Virginia win their gubernatorial races this year, they're going to be big voices in the Democratic Party. They're going to be big stars in the Democratic Party, yeah.
And big story in the big Trump narrative, which is Trump has bad night. You know, Karl Marx wins New York, two women set history in New Jersey. And I remember how big that was in 93 against Clinton. When you have the off-year sweep. And it's the beginning of Trump election losses, which could be quite a bad narrative for him.
Yeah, and both Sears in Virginia and Jack Cittarelli, the Republican nominee in New Jersey, are all in on Trump. No distance between them and Donald Trump. So it will be easy for Democrats to tie them together and paint their potential losses as a loss for the MAGA agenda.
Jersey will be interesting because Trump did better than expected there in 2024. So if it's a pretty big
Jersey
round.
Can surge late, you know, Cittarelli is more viable than the Virginia circus, I think, but still uphill.
He almost won in 2021.
Yeah, he did. We got to go. Liz Smith, you're the best. Go. Come back often.
Thank you.
Mike wants to expound on his dissertation on the American auto industry. So come back for that. And we'll see you all next week.
All right. See you later. Buy an EV.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.